This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. This week's guest is Corinne Sokup.
But I think about experience as kind of a suite of emotions that one experiences over time, you know, and how you can deliver that for consumers typically that engage with your brand or your entity, and how you try to navigate that as a whole.
Corinne is an award-winning creative lead and design educator with over 15 years of multi-platform experience focusing on strategic product innovation, experience design, branding, and systems thinking for work across the private, public, and nonprofit sectors. Her contributions have been recognized by Graphis, Type Directors Club, iMagazine, Communication Arts, AIGA, the Society of Publication Designers, Brand New, the Center for Plain Language, and the Emmys. Corinne, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you.
I am excited to chat with you about everything today, especially as we look at, discuss this idea of experience design, which I think is something that we talk both of those words. I think I pick on experience a lot, not pick on, but I think it's the victim of being it's somewhat overused and sometimes abused. But I think the same thing could be said of design as well. So when you pair up experience and design into experience design, where does someone start with that?
That is a great question. I mean, I think it's pretty interesting right now, just the semiotics of our industry as a whole. I'd say that you could throw brand in the mix too.
Yeah.
As a word. But with experience design, you know, I've wondered that myself quite a bit. And I think it ultimately is going to come down to the individual and, you know, the position and the sector that they're in. But I think about experience as kind of a suite of emotions that one experiences over time, you know, and how you can deliver that for consumers typically that engage with your brand or your entity, and how you try to navigate that as a whole. And designing that, right, is to set out with some intention about how you go about doing that. And that's the way that I think about it.
I love all of those quick soundbite definitions and the idea of the suite of emotions that you deliver over time. I feel like I'm asking the same question, but I'm asking it in a more specific way. Where does someone start with the suite of emotions that they might want to deliver or associate with their brand?
Mm-hmm. I mean, oftentimes the way that you might go about designing that from the beginning is thinking about your customer journey, right? Like, how does somebody first find out about you? How do they continue to learn about you? Where do they, you know, come up in one's mind when they engage with you? What does that feel like over and over again, right? And that can be everything from a product experience to, you know, a post that the brand puts out into the world, to how you recollect them, you know, down the line. And I'm speaking a little bit more with a digital lens, but that's true of retail and all sorts of kind of categories. So I think that thinking about a user experience journey is a really good way and framework to start thinking about designing for emotion.
That, you know, that is, it seems more applicable than one would think at first pass, because I do think when we talk about customer journey, we get caught up in the retail tangible side of that. But so many businesses today find themselves struggling with how intangible they are and how they can map a meaningful customer experience in spite of that.
Right. And I mean, you want to think at each of those points, how are you trying to make someone feel, you know, and where is there maybe the biggest, if you think about opportunities for design, you're often looking for the biggest disconnect, right? If you have an opportunity to take in information from your customers, where are the biggest pain points? How big is the delta, right, between what you want them to feel ideally and what they are feeling? It reminds me a lot of, you know, story design and filmmaking, right? Every beat of a story, you're aiming for some emotion, right? And it's all about kind of the orchestration of those feelings that I think makes for a really rich experience.
Well, yeah, we've stumbled onto all of the buzzwords early when we talk about experience, design, brand, and story. And I don't like calling them, I mean, I think they are buzzwords.
I was like, don't let me use any buzzwords, right?
but they're incredibly useful concepts. I think it's more a shortcoming when they're kind of reduced to buzzwords and without people thinking about what they help us do and why they're useful tools. For example, what you just said about story and how we map out the journey in a story is not unlike really what we're trying to do as brand builders as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think oftentimes, you know, as brand builders, the goal is maybe a little bit different than say film, where you're playing with emotions much more readily, you know, whether it's from thrill and fear to, you know, kind of suspicion and desire. In brands, you know, usually the goal is to make somebody feel kind of satisfied or relief or all quite positive emotions. And that's a beautiful thing, right? But I think there's still opportunities to think about the orchestration of those feelings over time in a way that makes you really kind of, interested in the relationship that you have ultimately with that brand.
Well, I love that idea of the orchestration of feelings over time, because I think whether it's a function of the buzzword nature of it, I think there's sometimes a disconnect, especially when we talk about story. I see it with clients, with students, where you talk about the impact that stories have, and then there's a pause from someone and they say, so we're like telling stories then, or, you know, trying to figure out how that maps to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But I think when you put it in terms of orchestration of feelings, it starts to connect some of those dots we might not be able to initially grasp.
Right. And I think that comes back to the word experience, right? There's a participatory nature in it. I think in the truest form of storytelling, where it's very kind of, there's a strong authorship. Again, I'm thinking about filmmaking. You know, you can point the camera at something and say, look at this, see this, you know, connect these dots. I'm very highly kind of controlling the emotions I want you to feel. I feel like in an experience design, it's more about an intention setting around how you want somebody to feel. But ultimately, it's what, you know, a user is going to take away and kind of piece together themselves in relation to those intentions. And so you can't kind of fully control it. And that's the beauty of it a little bit.
So is there a go-to brand that you find yourself turning to when, you know, when someone says, okay, so who does this really well? Who is great at the orchestration of feelings, the intention setting?
Mm. It's maybe a lesser known brand, but one that we've been working with really closely here in San Francisco, the Exploratorium. Have you been to San Francisco?
Yes, but I've not been to the Exploratorium.
It is a museum that has been around for over 50 years here in San Francisco, and I love it because it's just kind of the epitome of place here. It's kind of started with this really kind of hackery spirit by a physics professor who was very intentional about how he wanted people to learn science and the phenomena of the world. And so it's a building that's about 3,000 square feet of highly kind of experiential interactive exhibits. And the way that they're constructed is purely to kind of spark wonder and joy and curiosity in people's minds, instead of kind of telling you how to think or feel or understand kind of the scientific phenomena. And I think that that's so true to how they kind of construct and engage everything, even into the way they engage with kind of global partners like NASA, and now more with cities in terms of helping people kind of design in public spaces. But they're very good about not telling you what to feel or think, but staying true to that notion of just sparking enough curiosity and joy to get somebody to think for themselves.
Well, and I would imagine you used sparking a few times in there, and I think that intentionality of sparking wonder and joy also is a useful kind of brand spark to inform both the actual, the literal experience there at the Exploratorium, but then I would think that the people that are a key role in delivering that experience, that is something that, you know, that they can take the ball and run with it, that it is useful to them. It's useful to the folks doing the work of marketing that brand. But that's a pretty powerful keystone to the rest of the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're really good about, I think even we've been engaging with them in marketing, and I think a lot of the intention in marketing is bringing the kind of tactility and kind of interactiveness of the experience of the museum outdoors into kind of a flat surface oftentimes, which is very hard to do. But I think that that's been a fun part of kind of the visual experiments of working with them, is trying to bring that feeling out as much as possible, which is so true to the Exploratorium. But I think that, you know, their main purpose is to create, you know, both inspired learners, but also critical thinkers, right? And so I think in that way, they never try to finish a sentence or be kind of finite about anything, but just give enough for somebody to feel like they kind of fill in the pieces.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the 7 dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with 2 A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So we've talked about the brands that do this well. We've talked about the importance of experience design. If someone wants to get started with what could seem like a very vast and intimidating topic, what is a good point of entry, something that you can do to start to have an impact on your own brand's experience design?
Sure, that's a great question. I think, so I worked with the innovation company IDEO for a few years before Collins. And I think, you know, the hallmark of IDEO is human-centered design. And by that, it's really getting to understand the people that you're designing for. And I think when you think about experience design, that is the root of it. It's really understanding the way in which you engage with your audience in the deepest, most meaningful way. And I think oftentimes that is not, there is not the time and attention that's put to that kind of in a way that it can really inspire and motivate the designers building towards that. And I think there's a lot of quantitative surveys that are done, and that's a good step. But honestly, getting embedded in somebody's life in any way, it's a very journalistic endeavor, but I found that to be the most inspiring and grounding way to start to design an experience. So specifics to that might be doing a shop along with somebody as they go to purchase something to understand kind of what are the thoughts that go through their head. You know, what are the things they're attracted to and why? Some of my best times have been going inside somebody's home or even following them for a full day, whether that's on their job or in their personal life, as a way to just understand how they live. You know, what do they surround themselves by? What are the magnets on their refrigerator? You know, what are the concerns that they have and kind of the fears and hopes that they have? And how do you kind of create a space that you can have an honest conversation with somebody around those things? And that in itself is design, right? You know, you want to be mindful of how many people are in the room. What do you do to prepare that person and make them feel kind of safe and open? Sometimes that might be having multiple people in a room so that it kind of draws out conversation. So I think it's getting as close to that as possible and, you know, working with your colleagues to identify the most substantive and kind of human qualities of that conversation.
I love the specifics of that and also the focus on some of the more qualitative inputs on the customer, you know, the shop along, the following people, magnets on the fridge. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure there might be, maybe not listeners to this podcast, but the people that listeners to this podcast work with that might be more familiar with the quantitative inputs that tell me how many of our customers are this age and where they live. And
right.
I love the magnets on the fridge, but I feel like that might short circuit one of those types who might say, okay, what do you do right. with that? What do you do with the magnets on one customer's fridge?
Right. I mean, I guarantee you, if you get that person in that person's home, you're going to change their mind. I mean, there's so many times I've had kind of naysayers and skeptics, and if they're somehow involved in that journey, they can overnight become the biggest champion. That's not always an easy task, but an invitation can go a long way. And you know, I think something that I found really powerful, again, as a trained visual designer, is the extent to which you can try to bring the reality of that person's world into a room and use all of the storytelling tools at your disposal, whether that's, you know, creating a podcast from the event or, you know, an immersive recreation of that person's home. Like, how do you bring them one step closer to getting inside that the reality of that experience? I think can be a strong kind of conversion tool. It's a hard win, but I do think that if you can give people a few stories that they can then tell and they feel the emotional power of them, I don't know, it's just unparalleled, really.
Well, I love the idea too in dealing with the naysayers of converting them by making them part of it. And I think that too often everything that we talk about is so key, and we, in trying to do this, what's ultimately a heavy lift for an organization internally, for an organization with the help of an agency, getting the buy-in of others on the team is so critical. And I think that a key step that you highlighted just then is making sure that others, especially those naysayers, feel a part of the process as opposed to this is something that is happening to me.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I think that's something that we are, designing for all the time here, at Collins. And I think specifically even in San Francisco, I feel like in many ways we're kind of at the forefront of what it means to design for kind of organizational transformation. The companies we work for are often very large. There's a lot of kind of different silos to the divisions within the company. And when you think about capital B brand, right? How do you get cross-functional teams across digital, across product, across marketing to ladder up to one intention, I think is a challenge in its own right. And finding the right time and place to bring those people in, I think is in itself an art. We're always kind of experimenting with it ourselves because it can go awry, having too many people, for instance, can become problematic, right? So how do you identify the biggest champions at different phases and help people get skin in the game? I think that's really where it starts to, flip in your favor. And sometimes that's as simple as, when you're bringing new folks into the conversation, it's a cross share out, so it's you and the client co-presenting and it feels like it's coming from within, which it often is, right? And feeling like it's a bit of a back and forth. And when do you kind of make it happen entirely from within as well?
Well, and that's such a, it could seem like a lot of time on what could seem like a random or even small step, but it's one that has outsized importance because with the buy-in, with people that actually have skin in the game, you're going to be able to deliver better customer experiences. And back to everything that we talked about, carefully orchestrating, that is hard work in and of itself, but we can really only do that if we have everybody on the team kind of rowing in the same direction.
Exactly, 100%. Because, it's one thing to get people to sign off and say, yes, approved, let's move forward with this. And it's another thing for people to internalize what you're saying. And when you're talking about the ideas that you're setting out to deliver against, that's what you need in order for them to move forward and actually, survive in the world, is for people to understand the intention and to be, executing against it themselves.
I love that. Well, Corinne, believe it or not, we have come to the point where, speaking of carefully orchestrating emotions, get to ask you for a brand that has achieved that goal and made you smile recently. Mm.
So many. Can I do a few?
Sure.
A few small ones?
Absolutely. Okay. Usually people take the time being stumped at coming up with one, but if you've got multiples, let's hear them.
Well, I think it's because there wasn't kind of one major one, but there was small ones that all ladder up. But I'm gonna play with a few ideas here. So yesterday I was driving on a hike with my husband and we packed some food for the car. And one of the things that he pulled out was sun-made raisins, the little red box, that your fingers can barely fit into. And they haven't done anything kind of recently to make me smile, but it in and of itself just made me smile because I was like, this just really hasn't changed much. And it's not kind of trying to be anything it's not. And I felt like I just appreciated something about that and looked into them a little bit more and understood that they kind of were a cooperative of farmers. But I just love the kind of timelessness of that product and that form factor. So that jumped to mind. I also was thinking about the New York Times and how last year they started doing a number of different merchandising pushes into t-shirts and hats. And I thought that that was just such a powerful statement to recognize that, you know, what they stood for on a much bigger level as a brand. And obviously they deliver, you know, a product experience for news and journalism, but to recognize kind of times we're in and standing up for news as an institution and to give people kind of other ways to stand behind that through even their clothes. So that stood out to me.
That's great. It makes me want to go find that one of those cute little boxes of sun-made raisins, which I have to think is part of the form of that. It's still in that same box that they haven't, you know, put it into a pouch or something that might be more cost efficient or easier to pack in a ton into a box. It's the cute little boxes that we've always had with the same picture on them.
Exactly.
Timeless. Well, those are a couple of great examples. Where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
You can find us at wearecollins.com, and that's Collins, a brand experience design agency. And for me, I don't keep much of an online presence, but you can find me on Instagram at designcurio.
All right. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Corinne, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thanks, Nick. Lovely talking.
And remember, you can subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of Apple Podcasts, if you like what you're hearing, if we have orchestrated some emotions within you, head over there, give us a quick rating and review. Help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.